You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm Jeff Connors, and today we have a very, very special guest. That is Associate AD for Football Sports Performance, my friend and former colleague for a number of decades, Coach Mickey Moratti. Coach, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Coach Connors. Appreciate it. Good to see you.
So before we get started here, Mick, I'm going to go ahead and recognize my sponsor. We want to talk about Ed Watkins Marine. Ed Watkins Marine has two locations to serve you, as they are located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. He has fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, and UTVs. He has all the brands you are seeking: Sea Pro, Suncatcher, pontoons, Tritunes, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus Bass Boats, Explorer Skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins can help you with your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the show, and Big Ed Watkins was no doubt the most enthusiastic and positive athlete I have ever coached. Thank you, Big Ed. All right, Mick, we're back at it, brother. If you need a boat, you know where to go.
Big Ed.
We're going to get you a deal on them Tritunes, man, to take down the Ohio River, man.
I'm just thinking the same thing.
There you go. Catching some catfish in the Ohio.
It's not all you're going to catch.
So, Mick, what I want to do was we're going to talk about your career a little bit. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that you're the most successful collegiate strength and conditioning coach in the United States of America. That's my opinion of Mickey Moratti.
I appreciate that. That's humbling.
You have had an unbelievable career with 3 national championships. Is that correct?
3.
Awesome. So, Mick, the one thing I'm proud of as well, a lot of things, but you and I have been friends for a long time and been in this business for a long time. And we come from the same area of the country and actually played collegiate football in the same conference. Of course, you're younger than me. I was back there right around that Jack Delaplane era. And that's a few moments ago. So, we grew up in Western PA. You grew up in Ambridge, Pennsylvania. So can you tell me a little bit about young Mickey Moratti growing up in Ambridge? And what I really want to kind of think about here is what we always hear about Western PA, which is absolutely 100% true. It's blue collar immigrant experience as a microcosm of life. And talk about your experience a little bit.
No, I appreciate that. Like you said, Coach, you know, growing up in Western PA, you know, the one thing that, you know, as well as I do in this business, you know, you travel around the country, you're at this school, you come back to this school. But the one thing I've never forgotten is where I came from. I'm proud to be born and raised in Western PA, proud of being, you know, born and raised in Ambridge, Pennsylvania, which is, for those that don't know exactly where it's at, it's 15 miles north on the river, Ohio River, from Pittsburgh. So it's, you know, it's kind of where the Ohio River flows north for about 30 miles, and then it kind of dips down West Virginia, Ohio, and takes on its way down to the Mississippi. But, you know, growing up, like you said, you know, there were so many cool things thinking back and so many influences in my life. And one of the reasons why I chose coaching was because, you know, I grew up without, you know, my father left our family when I was in second grade. So my mother was a, you know, single parent working full time. My grandmother raised myself and my brother and sister. And, you know, you just had to find your way to practices and Little League and Pop Warner. And, you know, the coaches used to bring me home after I would find my way there. They had so much positive influence in my life. I never wanted to let them down. They were my father figure growing up from Pop Warner, junior high, you know, and they kind of all came from the same cloth. You know it. Maybe a little different from where you're from, but, you know, they worked those 10, 12-hour shifts in a steel mill. You come from the coal mining regions a little bit. So it's kind of goes together, but hard manual labor, hard work, hard, gritty, dirty, tough, you know, just trying to do whatever you can to support the family. And I just remember as a kid, like when I would go to my friend's house and their dads would come home. Well, first of all, at like 4 o'clock, you can hear the horns go off in the steel mills because it was time. Oh, yeah. It was time to go home, and there'd be a charge of, you know, men out of this steel mill holding the metal lunch boxes that was just silver, all rusty and dirty, just heading out of there. And you could hear the horns all over the town. But I remember just like when the fathers would come home, they were so like tired and angry and ornery and just had an edge to them. And it was because of you working in the mill. Like that's tough work. So, you know, I think you get your work ethic. I think you get a lot of those things from how you grew up, who you were around, you know, you are who you hang around, and just hanging around all those, you know, steel workers and, you know, forgers and truck, and you know, all the people that are involved in just, you know, that trade of being in the steel mill. It just, you know, and obviously growing up, you know, we both grew up with the Penguins and the Steelers and the Pirates. I mean, you won a bunch of world championships, and being a young kid like that, you always looked up to those guys. You always looked up to the, you know, Jack Lamberts and Mel Blunts and Mike Websters and the Steelers and the Pirates and the Winners and Tough and Black and Gold. And, you know, you could still see that emblem of that Steelers, you know, on the side of their helmet. And just that means much more than just the professional football team. You know, that means like a way of life. And, you know, it's changed, obviously, now. You know what I mean? Just, God, I remember like, you know, my mother would say, hey, we're going to Pittsburgh. We're like, yeah. You know, you're 2 miles out. You can't see it because of the smoke and all the stuff coming from the steel mill. Like, my God, like, where are we going? But yeah. You just, I mean, in the town, in Ambridge, my wife grew up the next town, Baden, Beaver County. Every house was the same color. It was light to dark gray from all the soot, from all the waste, you know, all the stuff coming from the smokestacks and, you know, blast furnace number 5 in J&L, you know, it was just a way of life, man. It just was, but you know what? They raised their families. They believed in tough, hard work. If you weren't tough, that was like the biggest compliment you can get. The only compliment you can get growing up, as you know, is, you know, being a tough guy and fighting and, you know, fighting through adversity, just the way it was. And if you weren't, man, it was a bad day, man. It was a bad day. So you always wanted to make the people around your community proud for being a hard worker and being tough. I mean, I was on a podcast the other day and they asked me what my favorite movie was. I mean, it's kind of not even a question. All the right hunters. I mean, Deer Hunter for you.
Yeah.
All the right moves for me. And why? Because it was Western Pennsylvania. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So. Deer Hunter was made in Clareton.
Yeah. There you go. And All the Right Moves was about my high school, Ambridge, in the movie, it was Ann Pipe. And I remember the producers of movie, they spent like a month in my high school walking around and, you know, getting the lay of the land. Don Yanessa was the head coach at Aliquippa, which was our rival. He was actually in a movie, Walnut Heights. So, you know, there's a lot of pride, you know, that, you know, it's funny, like my kids, you know, my son's 30, my daughter's 28, they're married. They never lived in Pennsylvania. They grew up in, you know, all different places. And then you ask them where they're from, they say Pittsburgh.
Right.
So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I coached in the pit one time. I think that's what they called Aliquippa's field. Is that right?
Yeah, the pit.
Yeah, you know, my dad was the head coach at Ringgold, Bell Vernon, and Beth Center, and he had a couple WPIL championships and a runner-up, and he took all three of those schools to the WPIL finals. And then the proudest moment of my life is when I was inducted into Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame with my dad. You know, that's definitely the proudest moment for me in my career.
That's great.
Just a few things, man, that I mean, get me fired up talking about this stuff. You know, I worked in the steel mill every summer when I was in high school. And my mother was working in the steel mill. She was a secretary, and she'd get me, my friends and I, jobs there. And we were making $10 an hour in the summer in high school back in, you know, 1973 or four, whatever. And that was a lot of money back then. And so I was a big flattener helper one summer. And that was interesting because I had to guide hot titanium through these flatteners. You know, then you had to flip it over and take it through again. So you didn't want to get your fingers caught in there.
So, it's crazy.
So, yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And, you know, both my grandfathers worked in the mine, total of 100 years. My one grandfather, 55 years, the other one, 45 years. Both of them started when they were 12 years old. And, you know, I just remember, you know, my grandfather, he went to work as a white man. He came back home every night as a black man, you know, so, you know, and that's
crazy.
That's the way it was.
Remember, and, like, when you would shake, like, I remember, like, my buddy's fathers, because they all worked in a mill, you'd shake their hands, like, on a Sunday when they weren't working and their hands were all like charred and, you know, just ingrained with dirt and their fingernails were, it was like 100 calluses on their hands. Just, my God.
Yeah.
Great. Great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, how about I wanted to mention it was special to me because I spent so much time in these places with my dad, actually, like the VFW, the Sons of Italy, the American Legion. We had a place called the Owls Club. You got the Miners Club. And a lot of those miners are dropping there for a Boilermaker before they go down underground or maybe hit one after the, you know, their shift. And
what I remember was, I'm glad you said that. The horn would go, the guys would charge out of the mill. They'd go right to the bars. They'd have a beer, shot of whiskey, and a hard-boiled egg. Remember the hard-boiled eggs
there
on the bar? And they would be there for an hour, and then they would go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the wedding traditions are something I always remember. You know, the big weddings with the polka dances And then, you know, the food is something I always, I miss the food. I haven't seen rigatoni very much. And, you know, you'd have chicken, you'd have cabbage rolls, it was the same menu at every wedding. And then you'd have the bridal dance where you chip in money.
Oh, standing there. Remember the ushers and the maid of honors would stand there with the bag and.
You get to dance with the bride, and then, you know, the groom would carry her out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
We
got married in the Baden Legion.
It was okay.
The best. It's like $5.75 a plate. $6.25 if you wanted the roast beef right there. Yeah, it was.
My wife's from Florida. She couldn't understand why I wanted to have a polka band at the wedding down in Florida. And the first time I took her home, we were coming out of Pittsburgh Airport, got on the road, and she said, wow, there's a sign there, Moon one way and Beaver the other way. I said, what kind of towns are we going to?
There's that one sign that says moon, blue belt, Mars, red belt. And then Beaver, green belt. It's somewhere on 65, but yeah, those are good times. I love going back.
Great stuff, man. Yeah. And, I don't know when you started playing football. I mean, I started, must have been like third grade. I mean, we had all those little leagues. We had this thing called the Bronson House in Washington, Pennsylvania. It was a miniature field. And all the grade schools and so forth, you know, we had a league there and we'd play each other. And I think you could get maybe three first downs and then you get a touchdown. But it was full pads. And, you started very early with that. Yeah, I don't know. I never lost my love of football, no matter how early I started. I loved it every day. So,
I started in third grade.
Yeah.
Beaver County, I played for the Ambridge Economites.
Gotcha.
Yep. Little Bridge.
Yeah, and then, I wanted to talk a little bit about toughness because I think you and I both, our coaching style, we believe that toughness could be developed. I'm going to speak for you on that because I really believe that's what you believe.
I believe it 100%.
And the way we grew up, we didn't have much choice, but I remember my dad's drills before practice, you going through these drills in full pads. One of them was called Bucket of Blood. The other one was the meat grinder. That was like Oklahoma drill, but you had to go like Oklahoma drill like six times in a row through two guys were waiting on you. They might bury you, but you got to get up and go to the next two. And then, of course, Bull in the Ring,
Bull in the Ring.
So when I was at Salem, our offensive line did Bull in the Ring on a 50-yard line before every game with no helmets on. And that kind of set the tone in the WVIAC.
Nice.
I love that as well. But in high school, what position did you play?
So high school, I played fullback. And then I played a little – they don't even have the position anymore. It was like a rover. It was like the rover back, which is like an outside linebacker that would just blitz every play with the big neck roll. You probably have
– Yeah, monster.
What I'm talking about. Monster back. That's what it was. Yep. Rover, yep. Monster back. Monster. Yep. I played those two. We played when I was in high school, we started out in AAA back then and then we went to Quad A. So we had because Ambridge High School was the enrollment was so big back then, we had to go play North Hills and North Allegheny and Butler and Newcastle and Shaler. I mean, a little bit out of our league. My senior year, we went back and played, where we should have played Moon and Montour and Aliquippa and Hopewell, where Tony Dorsett played, some of those schools. So, yeah, it was good. I really believe when you started, again, this was back when we played, but, playing Pop Warner, playing junior high, that was the deal. Like you just didn't want to let somebody down. You had to go hard. You had to. You just did.
No doubt.
Had to. And I think that's how you develop toughness. You just, the more and more you were put in that situation, the more and more you had the ability to fight through that situation. And the more and more I think you were able to be a fighter and be a tough guy and, never giving up. Because that's what the people that we were around, that's what they grew up on. That's what they were. That's who they are.
No doubt. Well, you ended up going to West Liberty to play ball. And, of course, I had played at Salem. I had graduated like 1980 from Salem. What year did you go to the West Liberty?
Freshman 84, and then I graduated 87 or 80, yeah, 87. 84, 87. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back then, Salem would have just hired one of the Bowden.
Terry Bowden.
So he had Jimbo Fisher was quarterback.
Yep.
They had probably three or four guys that had transferred in from like Nebraska, Florida State. They had like four or five NFL players. So yeah, that was a good experience.
Yeah, Moses Mobley, tight end.
Yes. Yep.
And of course, you know, Rich Rodriguez was the head coach there also.
He was after.
Yeah, I went back to get a Football Lifetime Achievement Award, and they put Jimbo in the Hall of Fame the same night. He came back to be put in the Salem Hall of Fame, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's real cool.
So, yeah, a lot of people don't know that those famous figures were actually at Salem, West Virginia.
Yeah, that's so, right.
Interesting place.
Yeah, very interesting.
I'm not sure you had to have much more than a high school degree to get in there. So, you know, fortunately, I got accepted.
But it was fun. Got to play ball, right?
I went and proved myself I had some intelligence. I went later and got a master's degree from Bucknell, so I had to redeem myself.
That's good stuff.
So you played fullback there, right?
I did. I did. The position is no longer. Now it's coming back a little bit, but
yeah.
You know, back then it awesome. Was wow. I mean, and then back then it was at least in the West Virginia Conference, like linebackers and defensive ends were big.
Right.
Like 240 and 250. Just that's all I remember. Big. And I remember we would run again another play that is kind of gone away is the ISO, you know, just blocking down, double teaming a nose guard, and then linebacker versus fullback, collision after collision after collision after collision after collision. Just I remember a couple times I forget who we were playing, I think Fairmont State. And it was like the third or fourth ISO in a row in the second half. So it would have probably been like the 30th ISO back then. And I would come to the line of scrimmage and look at the linebacker, and he would like look at me like take a big deep breath, like, all right, here we go again. And
yeah,
jog back to the huddle, and here we go again. It was just, you know.
You must have done a great job with that ISO, because they're not going to be able to run unless the fullback's blocking.
No, they cannot.
Absolutely.
No, they cannot. It was fun.
Great stuff. Well, I know that I read that you also had been an All-American academically.
Yes. Yep. I took, you know, again, that was something I learned at an early age. I just felt like I never wanted to let my teachers down, my mom down. So I buckled down in school, and that was a big deal to me. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. And I did want to mention, you know, and I really appreciate you sharing the story, about your dad. And I just wanted to ask you, because I've encountered this a lot of times through my career, in that, we had so many kids come through, that were in that situation. Did you find yourself counseling them at times, and did your experience provide you with a lot of insight there where you thought you could help them?
Yeah, it did, Coach. A great deal of insight, a great deal of I thought I can impact that athlete and help them through those tough times. But the other thing was, we've all been around some of those athletes that maybe had made that an excuse of why they did or didn't do something, or,
right,
you know. And I wasn't playing that game, because, you know, I was able to overcome and get through that. So,
yeah,
you know, at that point, you got to, you know, counsel them and just like share your story and just be vulnerable and, you know, just kind of, you know, open up to them and open your heart to them. And, you know, once they hear that story with the guys that I share it with, like, they look at you different. And I don't know what it is. Like, most of the kids that we've all had those kids that need direction, maybe came from that same family circumstance.
Yep.
They always would gravitate towards me. Even like you had your staff, you know, those guys would all, before I would even share that information. So I don't know if it's something the way that I was, you know, coming off, or how I was, you know, how I was perceived, but you know, they always would, you know, come, you know, gravitate towards me. So it was easy to open up to those guys and just share their story. Like, look, man, that's, you can't, that's not an excuse. You know, the excuses are the crutches of the uncommitted, and it doesn't matter. Like, you either in or you're out. You're either committed or you're not. Yeah. You want to do this, you don't. Like, this can help you or hurt you. So, you know, we've had a lot of meetings with guys, like I know you have as well.
I'm sure they really appreciated that as well. You know, then the other side of that is, and it's one of the reasons that I started a website, armoredlife.org, because I just remember so many guys that went by the wayside. And, you know, I just look back and think, man, is there something I could have done to help them? I mean, you know, maybe over 100 guys that went by the wayside for repeatedly smoking marijuana. Maybe I had two guys that got shot and killed. Just want to do everything you can to save those guys, and sometimes it's just really hard.
It is, you know. It's funny, like, I know we are Florida. We had a couple incidents with some of our players, and you know, you just want to help, and you don't want them to be in a situation where they, you know, they can't get out of, and you just try to help, and you try to counsel, and you try to give them as many chances, you know. It's hard. There's a fine line between, you know,
yep,
being accountable and you know, being able to function in this world. So at least in the collegiate setting, you know, high academics and, you know, big time athletics.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just had to let them go. It was sad, but you know, you just had to do it for the sake of the team, you know?
Yep.
And, yeah, before we leave this collegiate thing where we played ball, I'd like to mention our friend Al Johnson, because I think Al played in that same league too, didn't he?
He did. He played for Tech, and he played for two, Glenville.
Okay.
Tech and Glenville.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Fairmont or Glenville, but West Virginia Tech was interesting because it was the only turf field, and then you had to walk up that hill to get up there. They try to kill you walking up there. So you had no energy left for the game.
Yeah, I remember my quads were burning. I'm like, what are we doing here? My God. And they bus up. You know, they had the bus come around. Like, you know, they're smart. That was smart.
Yeah, they always had some talent.
It's funny. Yeah, big time. They had a couple NFL guys too. It's funny you bring up, you know, here's me and you talking. They've been around this business for a while. Al Johnson as well in the West Virginia Conference. There's two other current strength coaches right now that went to West Liberty. Brad Bechet, who's my nephew, he's the head strength coach at Toledo, is a West Liberty grad. And Ryan Russell, who's at Missouri, that used to be at Auburn, he's a West Liberty grad.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I can name you another one. My former assistant, Davon Gordon at Pitt. Davon was a fullback at West Liberty.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did know that.
Yeah. So he tried to follow in your footsteps, and he's a beast now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I did know that. That's right. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, West Virginia Conference representing.
Great coach, too. Great coach and great human being. Yeah, so moving on to a little bit about the history that we had a chance to get involved in early with this profession. A long, long time ago, there's something that we got introduced to. I had a guy that took me to a chiropractor one day, and he said, I'm going to show you this equipment today. This chiropractor has, it's called Nautilus. I said, oh, yeah? I said, well, that'd be good. I was about in, I don't know what I was, 9th or 10th grade. Yeah, and they took me through there, and I felt like I was going to throw up a few times, but I didn't end up throwing up. But I guess that was the whole thing, is pre-fatigue, where you do an isolation movement followed by a compound movement.
Yeah.
Like the chest press and the shoulder deal and the whole nine yards. So,
hey, I had the same experience. I had hurt my knee like in eighth grade in Pop Warner, and the physical therapist was right there on Dust Avenue in Ambridge. So I go there and they do some treatment, and they got my mother to sign me up for this month training. And it was the hip. Remember the old hip and back machine, the big one, right? It was the first one.
Oh yeah.
And you always got trained by a trainer. It was one on one.
Yeah.
It was limited rest, and I remember like going through there, just blown out. And at the end, you're just like, I might have threw up. I can't even remember back then. But they would give us like an orange juice, like a bottled orange juice. And it was like liquid gold. It was the greatest thing ever. Just as it touches your lips, you're just like, and they would beat the dog out of you. But you know what? I kind of liked it. Like, I kind of fell in love with it, actually. And that's kind of, that was one of my influences, was that high intensity old school training.
Yeah. I mean, if you believe that it develops toughness, I mean, which I do, I mean, you know, going to make a program that doesn't mean that you're not going to lift free weights. I mean, I had a Nautilus club in Tennessee for a while. And I also had a powerlifting team, and that's when I was powerlifting. So we would powerlift, you know, we'd do our free weight stuff, but then we'd always use Nautilus as a supplement, and we'd do one set to failure and go through, you know, and on Saturday we'd come in and try to murder each other.
Yeah.
So it was like, we had to think about the hardest type of progression we possibly could through the Nautilus equipment.
We had
first reps, negative only, the whole nine yards.
Oh, just complete torture. We had, so on Merchant, Dust Avenue and 8th Street in Ambridge, there was the VFW. Friday fish fries, you know, the whole deal. In the basement was a old school powerlifting, Olympic lifting gym. And they were, you know, they won the state meet in masters, like 40 years and above, for years and years and years and years. So I learned the free weight stuff in that basement of the VFW. You'd pay like $25 a month. They would literally give you a key, you know, to get in, and you could go anytime you want. And so you had that, and then you had this Nautilus, like you said. It was a great mix. Like, I learned that at a young age, like just, you know, squatting and cleaning and deadlifting and benching, and then going down here and just getting wiped out, you know, in a 20-minute workout.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, there's critics out there both ways. You know, and also, while I'm thinking about it, you know, I don't know if you've ever been on Route 19, but Route 19 had a place called Red Bull Inn, and work out in the bottom of Red Bull Inn.
Yep, Red Bull Inn.
Yep. So, also had some good steak there.
Prime rib, too. Yeah, big time prime rib.
So, you know, going back to that, you know, we're looking at Penn State with Dan Riley, Michigan, of course, Michigan State, you know, Ken Manny. I would go to, you've been to those conferences before where the hit guys would get up and start arguing. Other guys, the freeway guys would get up. It'd be a big, like, if somebody's going to get in a fight any moment, it seemed like, you know, like Manny would be up there losing his mind. And like, I was very entertained by that. I couldn't wait to listen to that, those debates about.
Oh my God. Hey, those things used to be heated now.
Oh yeah.
Like, they would be like research study after research study back and forth. And can't do that. It's too hard. What are you, back and forth? My God. That's when I first got into business. I was confused. You know, L. Johnson, being one of my mentors, was able to, because he did a hybrid. We did, you know, did everything like you did as well. But you know, when I went to Cincinnati, I'm still learning, and I would go to these conferences, they had me confused. Then I would go to NSCA, I'm like, okay. Then I go back to this one, like, it was hard to kind of navigate through everything.
Yeah, man, I just try to use it all, you know.
That's what I did. That's what I end up doing, what I did when I you know, come where I came from, just do it all.
Yeah, and then when, I don't know, did Chet Furman leave Penn State around 92? I'm trying to think.
When did Cowher, he left when Cowher became the head coach at the Steelers?
Because I couldn't remember if it was him that left, but I went up and interviewed with Paterno, because we were just 11-1, coming off 11-1 season, and somebody got me an interview with Paterno, and I went up there, and I went through the weight room. It was nothing but machines. That was it. And they were wall to wall, back to back. So it was me, Paterno, and his trainer. That's the only people who were in the interview. And I said, Coach, I can't lie to you, man. I'm a freeway guy. So I love the machines in there, but I'd have to make a change. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to get the job, but that's way back when, you know. Of course, now everything's come full circle. Everybody's got racks and platforms no matter where you go.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yep. That's the whole deal. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that that HIIT training. And, you know, the other thing that I really enjoyed back in the day was we had longer training cycles without all the discretionary weeks and everything. It just seemed like, I mean, I read Steve Logan would give me the guys, you know, who were red shirt, and I'd have those guys for like 16 weeks. I'd train them. Sometimes I'd train them right before practice. He'd let me train them for like an hour and a half. With 6 days, I had them on a six-day program, six-day split. And so I love that stuff. But then, you know, everything has changed so much since then. But and we'll get to that. But I wanted to go ahead and talk about your career a little bit. When you were at Cincinnati, when I was at ECU, of course, and that's how we got to know each other a little bit. And, you know, the one guy I really remember, you remember Tim Rose?
Yeah, our defense coordinator. Yeah.
So, and of course, he was our coordinator. And, I, you know, we had some knockdown dragouts, but I remember coming up to Cincinnati that one time, and that defense was, I mean, he had them playing aggressively. I mean, they were physical.
Yeah, that was good. That was good defense.
That's probably one of the reasons we ended up hiring Steve Logan. Ended up hiring him. But anything you want to talk about with your experience at Cincinnati?
Yeah, it was. You know, thinking back, you know, I got the job. I was 25 years old. I had no business being the head strength coach at Cincinnati. I just so happened to be at West Virginia prior with Al, and just coming off of that championship or playing for the championship. Against Notre Dame back in the day, there was a couple good connections. I got the job. You know, they gave me the keys, literally gave me the keys and said, go get them. There was 20 sports, 450 athletes, myself and a GA. That was it. The GA had class from 1 to 6. So he was out. So it was me. It was a one man show from, you know, 5:30 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. I started that job at 238 pounds.
Wow.
6 months later, I was 193. I had never sat down to eat lunch for the first year in that job. And I was just so excited. Yeah. I didn't care. I was running on just energy and, you know, adrenaline and just excitement. But you kind of learned about yourself, man. Like, just learn how to train guys in bigger groups, learning how to train different squad, different teams. Big time basketball, big time football, you know, learning a lot, like bringing some of the things that I learned at West Virginia to Cincinnati, like the old county fair workouts for our running program and the old speed groups. I just told somebody the other day, you know, I was with John Harbaugh for 8 years. And John Harbaugh, myself and Mr. Lauterbur, I can't remember his first name, but he used to be the head coach at Toledo, and he was an NFL scout. So one of these days, I forget what day it was, the second year, we started talking about speed training. And I kind of knew what you were doing back then with the McNair stuff. Yeah. We came up with this, we called it speed groups, where we would basically race. We would go through the drills and do all that stuff and get ready to run. And we would run, you know, 10s and 15s and 20s and 25s and race. And we would move guys up from one group to the next group. And it was so competitive. The guys got so fast and they got, you know, they got so much better in sprinting and running and just everything. And we kind of developed that based off of the, you know, this system that we had. So that was my primitive speed training. Was we just ran fast. And it's funny, like 30 years later, I know you got drills and stuff, but at the end of the day, you got to run fast. So it was a really great experience for me to figure out like who I was as a coach, what was beneficial, where, you know, injury prevention to development, because East Carolina was like Cincinnati. You would get 6'3.5", 192-pound defensive ends. You know, go get them. Well, you can't play defensive end 192 pounds. So you had to learn in nutrition and eating and training. We weren't on a 6-day program with our walk on or our developmental guys. I think we did 5 days a week. I did train them on Saturdays on game days. Cause I didn't travel the first year. They said, no, you got to, there's too much. You can't travel with football. So my first year in 1990, I didn't travel. So I was training those guys. I don't know how East Carolina was. We had 20 sports, but I had 21 sports because we had 45 prop 48 guys. I don't know if our young coaches know what prop 48 guys are.
Well, we had our share at ECU for sure.
We had 48 because back then Cincinnati was it had like a junior college within the university. So all you needed was a GED and you're in school. Now you're not eligible NCAA rules. So I would have these guys, I would have like, there'd be 40, 45 to 48 guys, 50 guys, you know, 75% of them had their GED. That was it.
Right.
They're trying to play major college football. So I don't want to say I use those guys as guinea pigs because that's not fair, but you kind of learned a lot about training through that group because some of those guys, you know, I mean, 10 guys would make it through the year because the other guys would flunk out of school.
Right.
So that's changed. So, yeah, I just think you learned so much about yourself back then because you had time. You there was nobody else. There wasn't – sometimes it's better to do things by yourself.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, I could tell some stories about that too, but I mean – the one thing I'll tell you with regard to what you were speaking of, once I learned that there was a difference between, you know, there's a big difference between max velocity and acceleration mechanics, for instance. This is after I had been studying speed for a while. You know, when I was in Carolina, every Friday, I would group the guys. You might have 4 or 5 guys in the same group that had the same, you know, the same 40 times. Whatever, you try to match them up. And I had all the video guys out there, and I had multi-starts. So you're laying on your stomach, you're laying on your back, you're one knee down, two knees down, facing the other way, any kind of start I could possibly think of. And I'd hit the whistle, and basically the video guys would have, we'd run 10s, and I had about a dozen different positions. We'd run 10s, and then we'd run 20s with a dozen different positions. I was talking to Boo about this concept. He loves it because, you know, he really likes coming from different positions, mixing it up. He calls it scramble. He puts it in the middle of a lot of his workouts. He just, you know, they'll be doing some exercise and he'll hit a whistle and they got to scramble and sprint 10 yards.
I love it.
10 yards, whatever. But those guys would compete. And of course, we'd make a big deal about it. You know, who won, whether we give them shirts or But on Monday, we'd post that information of who won each group. And, of course, if you jumped, you were out.
Out.
You know, you're out right away. So coming from all those different positions, from a low position, I think helps to develop strength as well. You know, because the lower you are, the stronger you got to be to come out of there. And that's why, you know, strong track athletes come out of a stance and start out, you know, come out of a out of blocks and they're going to drag that foot. But not everybody can drag that toe. You know,
you're right.
So, that really, when you're talking about that, really put me in mind of that because I thought that was so valuable. And I think that's valuable for any program now, like on a Friday before the weekend, get that competition going. So, let's go ahead back to your career and talk about Notre Dame. You know, of course, I'm envious of that. I'm Irish, man. I would have done anything at Notre Dame. But, you know, we played at Notre Dame, which was great, even though we lost. But then when they came to Carolina, we beat them. And so that was really special for me to beat Notre Dame at Carolina, of course. But I talked a little bit about that experience.
That was a great experience. You know, again, when you grow up in Pennsylvania, there's only three schools that you love growing up. It's either Pitt, Penn State, or Notre Dame.
Yeah,
and being a Catholic, I went into Pitt. I went into Penn State. I was Notre Dame. My bedroom was, you know, the old pennants hanging, posters. Yeah. I knew everybody on the team. You know, I just, it was no, because you used to watch the highlights on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
You know, back when TV, you know, it ain't like it is now. I just fell in love with Notre Dame, fell in love with the gold helmets. That was my dream school. And then here's me getting an opportunity to go there relatively at a young age. I think I was 33 or 34. And it was a whole different animal, like just the tradition and expectations and how many staff members and just, you know, everything that goes with Notre Dame football. It was a great experience. I learned so much. I was able to be a part of some of the discussions of, you know, with the athletic trainers and the PTs, and we used to call it the athletic performance team, which I still do now at a whole different level. But I learned that at Notre Dame, you know, just everything about health and safety. We had great doctors there, and they would be involved in, you know, you didn't have to present your training philosophy or methodology, but, you know, they would be around and ask questions and, you know, just supporting. They just wanted to support you, and it was great. It was awesome. I never forget my first game there. So the team, well, Michigan, team up north, they had just won the national championship. So that would have been 1997. I got there in 98. And we had a veteran team, and you know, that was back when the all the strongman stuff was going strong with tire flips and pushing vans. And I had like these old rusty vans. Guys were pushing, flipping tires, and doing a lot of the strongman stuff. It was awesome. And those kids never seen it before, and they bought in so good and so well. And I'm just like, hey, this is great. Veteran team. So anyways, we're playing Michigan at Notre Dame. This is my, you know, again, Cincinnati is, you know, you're at Conference USA. It's a power, you know, group of five, whatever back then, if you want to call it that. The media coverage was not as big. You go to Notre Dame, it's the top. I mean, that's when the internet started coming out. So all the little websites and all the message boards. And so anyways, all this stuff is kind of happening in 98, playing Michigan. First half, they're beating us 19-6. And it's not looking good. We can't stop them. We're not running the ball. We look tired. I'm like, I go to my assistant, Aaron Hillman. I'm like, and this ain't going well. Uh-oh, what do you think? And for some reason, the way we trained the kids, that summer I had taken them to the Michigan Dunes off of Lake Michigan, which is about 30 miles outside of Notre Dame. And we ran the dunes and the sand, and we were doing a bunch of stuff all summer that was new, and there was so much media coverage around it. I think I was in Sports Illustrated one time in that summer. I'm like, oh, geez, there was so much building up. So now it's 19-6 at halftime, and I'm like, oh, this ain't looking good. So anyways, rally at halftime, get back on the field, and we ended up beating them 34-36-19. And it was one of them, like, we would run the ball 10, 13, 14, 15 straight times. So it was a big deal. You can imagine after that game with all the media hype of the new strength program, and I got the game ball. I'm like, you know, it's my dream school. It's awesome. All the websites and all the message boards. This is the coach. Why, you know, it's the coach of the year. What are we doing? It was awesome. I'm like, okay, all right. You know, we all have egos. We're like, this is good. Next game, 6 days later, we play at Michigan State. They beat us 52-7. Now, you can imagine 180. They don't know what they're doing over there. This strength program, where do we get this guy from? So I was like, that was the first time I got, here we go. Just, you know, all the expectations and the fans. And so that was my first kind of experience at Notre Dame. It's a great place, great institution.
Yeah.
Got great kids. I mean, everybody's so highly educated coming in. And, you know, it was harder to train. It wasn't harder, but the kids had such a training background from their personal trainers back then.
Yeah.
You had a kind of, there was a lot of explaining the why to, where at Cincinnati, the athletes we got, it was like they'd run through a wall and they wouldn't even ask a question.
Yeah.
So that was a little different, but it was a good experience because I had to explain and teach the kids why. This is why we're doing it. This is what it's doing. This is what you need to do. This is, so it was a great experience.
Yeah, and then going to Florida, I guess you and Urban, did I read that you guys had been GAs together at OSU?
We were.
Okay.
We were, but kind of lost touch. We reconnected when I was at Cincinnati. His sister, Gigi, was a professor there. She's a provost. And he would come recruiting when he was at Colorado State. And he would just come down to the weight room and just, because he graduated from Cincinnati, he would come down and watch. Like, he'd be standing there for, guy coming away from start watching. I'm like, I was by myself. I can't like stop training and go over, hey, how you doing? I just let him there. I didn't even say hi a couple days. He'd come back the next day. About 3 days, he's still standing on the corner. I said, I better go say hi to this guy. And I'm like, I think that's Urban. Literally, I didn't even know it was. So we kind of reconnected there and, kept in touch. He was at Notre Dame as a wide receiver coach. And then when he left to go BG, Utah, Florida, then I got the opportunity to go down with him, Florida. And it was really good because the staff that he had brought together was a lot of the staff that we had at Notre Dame. So I knew a lot of our coaches. My wife was very familiar with the wives, which is big, as you know. The kids knew the kids. So it was easy to, pack up the U-Haul and head down south.
Yeah, I'll never forget UNC went up to Utah that year, and they were running that option where you could pitch it forward or backward. I never saw anything like that. So I was like, man, this right here is crazy.
I know he had a great offense.
Yeah, so
interesting. Back then the kids were in elementary school, so you have to sit them down and, say we're moving. My wife or my daughter, she was a little emotional, which you could imagine. And my son's like, Dad, he's like, I like it. I like that Urban Meyer. He's aggressive. Fourth down, he's going for it. He don't care, man. I go, yep. He's like, let's go. So, yeah, it was fun.
Good stuff. Well, I know that you, hung your hat on a lot of competitive scenarios, competition within the team. And I remember, reading something where I think it was maybe Tebow had been fighting somebody over a towel for an extended period of time all over the facility. Is that a true story? Or tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories to be told about that experience, which was awesome. kids were so competitive. It was such a competitive environment. Not the other schools weren't, it was just different. And I think there was a couple issues with Tim. Just, Tim was one of those athletes that you just can't explain them. They're so competitive and they'll fight to the end. And, you almost thought he was from Pittsburgh, the way he fought and the way he just kept grinding. And, I think what you're talking about, there's a bunch of stories about Tim, but we had a competitive drill, one-on-one tug of war, with Cam Newton at the time.
Okay.
Cam Newton beats him. Like, Tim Tebow don't lose, beats him. It starts talking smack to him, and it got ugly because they were going back and forth at each other. And that was like a month, 2 month, 3 month competition every day. It was something.
That's awesome.
We'd have fights. I'd have fights. There'd be fights every day, like literally fist fights every day. You had like, coach, there's a fight in the locker room. Like, after a while, we're just like, they'll figure it out. Like, they'd be fighting each other. And because it got so competitive, and they would talk smack, and you'd be like, hey, get a coach in there, make sure they don't do anything. And then 10 minutes later, they're walking out together laughing and eating dinner together and hanging out. And then the next day, competing again, wanting to kill each other and go at their – I mean, just it was wild. And then, after that, they get dressed, shower, and come back out. And one player told me, Coach Mick, listen, man, the locker room's our space. We got it. you're good. You don't need to come in. Tell the coach they don't need to come in here. We got it. And they would fix a lot of team stuff in that locker room. I don't know what they did. You could hear a lot of rumblings. Yeah. You could hear stuff getting turned over and knocked over, but they kind of handled it, which, you know, great teams and great programs handle it from their leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I had two guys fighting inside a power rack one time. And, you know, a few of those things that happened. One guy stuffed another guy under a bench one time. I said, okay, I'm tired of this. So I went and got some cuticle sticks from the Marines. And I went 30-second bouts in the locker room with helmets on, mouthpieces, gloves, the whole nine yards with cuticle sticks. But I did not realize those cuticle sticks were that heavy.
Yeah.
So after a few bouts of that, I cut it out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus, I mean, you couldn't even think about doing that nowadays.
No, God, no. Yeah, when in August when that Swamp Kings came out, the little documentary, you know, our players were watching it and they were like jacked up some of the stuff the kids were saying and players were saying. We used to do the wrestling where one guy would lay down on his stomach and the other guy would kind of get on top and the object was for the guy on the bottom to get to the end of the mat. And it was supposed to be stay down or like in a snake roll or stay down like in all fours, but it turned into like no rules, whatever it took. I mean, it was bloody and nasty. And we were in Florida, there was wrestling wasn't as big as it is in the Midwest. So we couldn't find wrestling mats. We had to get the old 6x8 gymnastics mats and tape them. And as soon as big guys start rolling on the mats, they break apart. So literally they were doing these mat drills on the basketball court and you could hear just skin ripping, just marks everywhere. Oh my God. It was good stuff, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to just talking about these types of things, I got to mention those two guys I had fighting in the locker room before that Cincinnati game. Just brought two guys in from the street. Of course, they were fighters, but that was like they were MMA, but they didn't know they were MMA. You know?
Yeah.
But Steve Logan walked in the locker room. Had two guys fighting three rounds. He about passed out. But
that was the year. That was the year after we. That was the year after we beat you guys up at Nippert.
Okay.
Because and you guys had a good team that year. It wasn't your big time year, I don't think. I think it was after that. But you guys had a good year, but, you know, we're like, all right, we felt confident. And then you guys came out and just slapped us around the field. And then, you know, you didn't tell me the story till about 10 or 15 years later. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably what it was. You know, people forget the definition of a coach is to motivate and inspire the competitive human spirit. Well, you did that by bringing those two fighters in there because they were motivated.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Good memories. All right, so I wanted to go ahead and get into the art of coaching here. And we got 10 or 15 more minutes here. Basically, I thought that in our career, we had a great opportunity to develop the art of coaching because we stood on our feet all day observing people. I made a lot of mistakes that I had to correct over the years, but it was a great learning experience because I thought it helped me get better. But just looking at guys and being able to develop an eye for speed and movement and mobility and fast twitch qualities and power that was specific to football and, you know, that type of thing, and also character, of course. But I guess my question is, with the NIL and the portal, and what are your thoughts here as far as, you know, what's the biggest challenge now for a young strength coach breaking in, trying to learn how to be the best strength coach? Where those things are concerned, do you still have an opportunity to gain that advantage in relationship to the art of coaching?
Yeah, coach, that's a great question. You know, I'm somewhat concerned for the future of our profession that we both chose. You know, I got in this to make an impact, to instill a work ethic and a toughness through strength and conditioning and speed training and the things that we development is what I love. physical development, emotional development, spiritual development, mental development. And to develop someone, there has to be a strong culture. Like, it's got to be kind of driven, and it's got to be standing on core values. If you go to ask some young strength coaches now what their core values are, there'd be a lot of them that couldn't answer the question. Like, what are you talking about, coach? No. I'm talking about methods. I'm talking about culture and the art of coaching from a cultural standpoint. And then, you know, now you're bringing, you know, we just had 16 mid-year freshmen show up January 8th. And we brought in 7 transfers. Some got here 2 weeks ago. Some got here a week ago. We had 2 guys got here Monday. We're already in week 2. So now you got to make sure that they fit the culture of your program, the football program, the culture of the athletic department. And then you got to kind of figure out where they're at physically. You know, it's so hard. And you have to do things so fast now. The 16-week programs are over.
Oh, yeah.
It's now 8 weeks. Well, you got these transfers. It's now 6 weeks because we have what's called a transition period, transitional athletes.
Yeah.
We assume that they haven't done anything. Now, some of our high-end transfers, we know they've done some because they've come from great programs. They played the game of football at a high level. But we still have to ooze them, and the progressions are slower. And you're trying to sync this all up, you know, sync it all up so they're ready to participate in spring football. And I'm just thinking, that's a great – I thought the other day, like, my younger strength coaches, they're following the workout plan. And I'm like, do they have the EQ, I guess, not the IQ, but the EQ, the emotional intelligence, to figure out what these athletes need from a physical standpoint, from a training standpoint? You know, some guys come from programs, they don't do the same lifts that you do.
Right.
So then you're like, now you back them up. You've got to teach them and train them to do what you want them to do. You know, that's just the transfer portal. And then you could put 2 years into a player and he walks out the door. So it's kind of like, okay, now how much time can you put into guys that may transfer as opposed to how much time and energy you could put into guys that you know will not transfer? And then there's that, I mean, I feel like crap when I'm not training some of the, you know, newer players because I don't know if they're going to be here in a year and a half, 2 years. You only have so much energy and time. Like, what do you do? So you got like 4 or 5 different programs going on in your program,
right?
Because of where they're at physically, where they're at from their age, you know, age and fitness levels and those type things. That's just a portal. Now you have this other entity, which is NIL.
Yep.
Now you guys are, you know, they're making more than the coaches.
Yeah.
You know, back, you know, it's funny. 6 years ago, you know, they would, you know, the public universities will publish your salary. So my salary gets published maybe 8 years ago or whatever. Players are like, coach, man, let me hold some. I'm like, what? They're like, let me hold some. Like, we talking about, man, hook me up a little bit. Now it's the other way around. I'm like, hey let me hold that, hold that car you got out there, man. Let me take a spin.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, at least here, I don't know the other universities, I could imagine, but here, Coach Day has developed such a strong culture. Gene Smith, our athletic director, who's now moving on here at the end of June, has developed such a strong culture. You couldn't even tell. Like, some of these kids are making 6 digits. Some are making 7 digits.
Yeah.
And you couldn't even tell. It hasn't changed the kid.
Well, I just remember where you had to, like, sneak around to have some kids at your house for dinner. You had to fill out paperwork. And I mean, you couldn't give anybody a dime.
It's the other way around now.
Yeah, exactly. They're
sneaking coaches to their houses to take them out to dinner because, it's great. Obviously, that it's been coming, you know, name, image, and likeness has been heading down our way for a while. I just think everything happened the same time. got out of COVID. Remember now, we got out of COVID. Hey, I had a player that the first in-person class he's ever taken in the ever in college was last semester. This semester.
Wow.
It was raining one day. He calls up the academic people. He's like, hey, so-and-so, do we still have class? It's raining out. Like, so you got this COVID. These kids, I call them the COVID babies, coming off of the COVID stuff. You yep. got the transfer portal. And then you got NIL all wrapped into one. Like, it just all came at once. And to navigate through that as a head coach, to navigate through as the, you know, administrators, to navigate through it at our level in the weeds, like, yeah, you just got to, I don't know. I'm concerned. I'm overly concerned for the, you know, the young strength coaches out there just making those emotional and intelligent decisions based on, you know, what's out there.
Gotcha. Well, hey, man, I want to go through technology real quick, and I'm just going to ask you, let's go first, force plates. What's your favorite force plates? And
yeah, we use the
– what do they do for you that you value, that you think really helps your program? What's your opinion?
Great question. We use the Hawkins force plate.
Yeah.
And I believe it gives us another tool to look at imbalances, to look at things that need enhanced. We use it in a pre-testing situation. We use it periodically to test progress. During the season, we use it to look at fatigue and monitor fatigue through the force plate jumps. So it's kind of become like a staple in your program. It just has. And we have a sports science department, and we have advisors. Dr. Kramer is one of my senior advisors, yeah. which I know you're fond of.
Yeah.
And he helps us. He gives us insight of, you know, what they're seeing on these force plates. I've learned so much. I just try to hire people that, you know, kind of understand it a little bit better than I have. And I've really, you know, we've really used it a great deal here in the last 3-4 years.
So basically it's giving you an indication who's got some twitch in it coming in the door, and then how much twitch you're able to develop from that.
Exactly. And it'll also give you, you know, eccentric and concentric power. It'll measure, which kind of the new thing we're looking at is braking power, eccentric braking power.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the injury prevention road. And yep. So we kind of use that in some rehab and some weak link stuff that we call it.
Yeah. Well, how about VBT? You know, of course, I use tendo units through my career quite a bit for different purposes, but you know, what are you doing there?
Again, we use the tendo units when VBT became popular, and now we have Elite Form, which is the you know, basically a computer camera. No wires or anything. It's simple. And we're doing some sort of VBT training throughout every cycle. And the other thing too is we're charting everything now, and it's easy to do that in the Elite Form. Anything at the rack, you just, even if you're not, you know, velocity based, even if you're just doing a basic military press, we literally, it's a great way to keep track of kind of what you're doing. But the VBT, we'll cycle it. We'll, undulating wave periodization throughout the off season, throughout the season. It's a great way to, you know, keep the guys their power output without loading the bar up. It's a safe way, and it's competitive too as well. So
sure.
We'll squat, bench, all of our Olympic modification movements are done with it. Chains and bands, all that, you know, we're just a big old hybrid melting pot of training.
I hear that. I've been there a little bit. How about the Aura rings every athlete has?
They do. They have the opportunity to have it. We don't mandate it. We're not, you know, our athletic director doesn't want us to mandate just because of some privacy things, but it's a great way to monitor your sleep habits. recovery habits. It gives you so much information with respiration rate and deep sleep and recovery tools and just different things. The hardest thing is they're still 18, 19, 20 years old. I forgot to put it in. I forgot to plug it in. I forgot to put it on. So, you know, we just try to educate them the best we can to, cause it's benefiting them. It's not, you know, we're not trying to spy on them. Like
right.
We're just trying to, you know, make sure that sleep is the number one recovery tool in the world. We just want to maintain and, you know, understand how important it is.
All right. GPS.
GPS, you know, nowadays everybody's using GPS. We use two. We're using the Zebra system that the NFL uses. We got into it about 8 years ago. NFL was using it. I never had changed. I just like to compare with the NFL. I like to compare all the different positions with top end, max velocity, speed, speed training, load management from a acceleration, deceleration standpoint, from a yardage standpoint, looking at different things. You know, you could tell just from the GPS, you know, how good a separator and off a wide receiver is based on the level of his deceleration in a metric. We also use Catapult. So we kind of got two things going on, but it gives us as much information as we can use. And again, I lean on our sports scientists to help, you know, kind of navigate what does this mean. And I know a lot of strength coaches are out there trying to, you know, figure it out. Yeah. But, you know, it's we're blessed to have these people around us.
Yeah, the performance team that you have up there, you know, I came up from the clinic, was like, just like blew my mind. Of course, you know, Bill Kramer's a guy that kind of got me into this thing, sent me out to see Mike Clark at Texas A&M, and, you know, I was kind of off to the races trying to get into the profession. And then Ronnie Jones with the Philadelphia Eagles, the guy that kind of got me into it at ECU. So, you know, it was, you know, Bill Kramer has been – awesome, you know, for a lot of people. I mean, he's helped a ton of people, and he's a great guy, man, great human being. So I can't say enough about him. Yeah, so then about very specifically, overspeed with Sprint 1080, you know, what are you finding there?
So with the 1080 Sprint, again, it all basically what it is a, you know, horizontal power development computer measurement tool. I mean, it's we use it right now in our off-season program profiling. So we have already tested all of our incoming freshmen and the transfers. So once we get that information, we put them in a bucket based on what their needs are. And we got like our one bucket's fast, power one, power two. Obviously, the guys that aren't strong enough to produce force, they're in the lowest group because just they're not strong enough yet. So. Yeah. Based off of the data that we get and kind of where we want to put them in that bucket, then we'll put them in a bucket and then use how we're going to train them from a speed standpoint, from an acceleration standpoint, based on what bucket they are. Because again, because fast guys need different things than that the power one group.
Yeah.
So we're using it as a profiling tool, and then we'll also use it as a periodic tester and a training tool throughout our training cycle.
Gotcha.
We use it a lot with our rehab. So if guy coming off, you know, return to play, our physical therapist will grab it, and you know, that's one of our kind of metrics for them to return to play, making sure that they're producing the same force, you know, right leg to left leg and vice versa based on what they're coming off of.
Gotcha. Well, so I guess my next question is, you feel good about the financial investment. You feel like you control the technology. It doesn't control you. And you feel like a lot of these things are of great benefit and will help help strength coaches in the future to be more productive.
I do. I am 100% bought in to those being great tools in your program without taking away of hard, like training's hard. and it's going to be hard, and we don't apologize for it. It still has to be hard, and it still has to be progressive, and you still have to get under a bar, and you still have to do the things that you have to do in the weight room. I just think these tools are great measuring sticks for you with the data and a lot of comparisons too as well to see where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, NC State this year, I remember, you know, I was watching a game. I was like, yeah, we got a linebacker around 23 miles an hour. I was like, wow, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's fast.
So, yeah.
Like, that's fast.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I don't know what that is 40-time wise. Of course, that's what I relate to more. But
you know what's funny? Coach, I don't even test the 40 anymore.
Yeah.
I just max velo.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, you know, because I could see the effectiveness here. But I guess my last question for you is if you had barbells and a place to run, how close could you come?
How close can you come to success?
The production you have now, how close could you come with just barbells and a place to run?
I think with the experience I have now, I think you can come pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about Mickey Brody.
I could come pretty close.
Yeah. And I believe that about myself, you know, toward the end of my career, and I'd get a lot of young strength coaches coming in. Hey, coach, we need to buy this, we need to buy that. I was like, I don't have the money for it. And at the same time, I want to be on the floor. I want to be eyeballing people because I think I know intent. I think I know what somebody's working hard. I think I know if somebody's in shape and I know if somebody's running fast. So, I mean, that was kind of it with me, but I definitely appreciate the technology as well.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably look at someone doing a clean pour or a hand clean or a power clean. And you could tell them exactly how fast it's moving. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could tell a guy running now that I have some of this technology. I could kind of tell how fast he's running just based off of got other guys running, just all the guys you've seen and been able to eyeball and look up. And
yeah, and you get to know your people.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, man. I mean, I'm going off natural light here, so you can see it's getting dark. And I don't
like what's going on down there, man.
Looks like the Grim Reaper coming at you, but yeah, I didn't turn many lights on in my place here, but I got this big window, but. Man, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. I appreciate you so much. I'm going to try to hit your clinic again. And so I'll need to get my information about that and see my man Bill Jacobs and a couple other folks there. Looking forward to it.
We won't do the clinic this year. We'll do it next year, like every 2 years.
Okay.
But gotcha. You know you're welcome up here anytime. Close friend. I appreciate all the stuff you've taught me over the years, and you know, seriously, it's the way it is. You haven't texted me in a while. I kind of miss those. So we got to get back on our little text thread.
Yeah, we'll get with it, man. But thanks so much. And I'll be talking to you sometime soon. And this is Jeff Connors for Absolute Empowerment signing off. God bless. And we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, Mick.
Thanks, coach. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!